I mean, everyone knows. And if you remember the broadcast, Andrew, when I was talking to Lorraine Day, and she said about the health problems that gay men have in San Francisco, I was floored. She said they were like 500 times more likely, maybe I'm wrong, somebody can point it out, 500 times more likely to receive serious life-threatening infections and illnesses from their lifestyle and to die from them. Now, we're talking about people who were performing gratuitous anal sex and other things to get sick from, and this was actually promoted by this group, was it not?
Oh, absolutely, Daryl. And again, it's amazing to, and I remember the Lorraine Day broadcast in which she brought that up, because, of course, she was, I think, the top doctor in America at that point. She performed more surgery on people with HIV or AIDS than anybody else at that time. She was in the San Francisco clinic in the 80s, just as it was breaking. But, yeah, it's amazing that... we've only been through a few of them, and we've actually already been touching on these subjects before we've even got to these 45 elements of this Communist Manifesto. So it just goes to show that it's all out there. We're mentioning them now, and we've already been talking about them, because this is where the world's going, and it's amazing to see a document like this as part of the U.S. Congressional Record. And we can point to so many examples of it today, and it's supposed to be communism, and it's happening in all these so-called democratic countries.
Well, here's one, number 43, overthrow colonial governments before the native populations are ready for self-government. Kenya, hello. How about this one, internationalized Panama Canal? How about 10 years ago we gave it back, and now it's being run by the Chinese, being held by the Panamanians, and being directed by Israeli and Mossad interests. You go down there, ladies and gentlemen, every other person you meet that doesn't have a real job over there, they just walk around the streets, you'll find is Israeli, moving drugs and every other thing around the world almost with impunity. And of course, you know that the jump-off point for their drug trade is Panama. No mistakes here, ladies and gentlemen. This stuff was designed into being. It was not an error. Let's go into 1965 here and talk a little bit about some of the things you found out here. It says a friction between the races in Britain. This is interesting.
Yes, the Race Relations Act of 1965 is introduced by the Attorney General, who was a Russian Jew called Frank Soskis. It made racial discrimination unlawful in public places. Now, the interesting thing here is that the introduction of different races into countries is really the most effective form of warfare against the Western world that the Jews have adopted, known as the Silent War. And it's taken place at various times during this last century, primarily in the US and the UK. And it's generally done under the pretext of needing other races to fill a gap in the labour market in that country. Now, the electorate of the country is concerned. They're never asked when they want immigration into the country, but it is forced on them. Now, the interesting thing here is that, as we know, the Jewish state, you have to be a Jew to move to the Jewish state. It's as simple as that. But in other countries, and that's because they want unity of their race, and they promote all this unity of their race, but in other countries they want to have a protracted society. They want to have all different races, religions, and what have you. So these people can't find unity to join together and fight against this oppressive force that these Zionists are. And it's a very difficult road to go down, because when you talk about this, people will listen to myself, oh, is he racist talking about this? I'm merely stating facts that I find it very interesting that the world wars were used primarily to kill off millions and millions of white race people, and then immediately afterwards other races were brought in to fill the void that these people left. And so it kind of fits in with their Talmud, where they see the world population as consisting of Jews and non-Jews. So you're either a Jew or you're a non-Jew. And the only possible, that their idea is to destroy all races apart from the Jews, and they want to have the Jews and one other single race of non-Jews. They've also wanted a world government. Now, if you mix up the races into different countries, it's very easy to say to people, well, what's the point of having all these different countries? Because we've got virtually every race represented in every country now anyway. And so it's, they can use that to say the idea of nation states is now obsolete. We're now we're a world people, and we're all, it's wonderful that we're all associating with each other and what have you. And again, I've already mentioned about the cohesive native population, and we'll touch on how Germany banded together when they were threatened by the old Judea declares war on Germany, famous front cover from 1933, when Jews worldwide were told to boycott German goods and what have you, when so many Jews were kicked out of the German parliament.
Yeah, but many of them stayed in Germany throughout the war, including Max Warburg, stayed until 1944 in Hamburg during these things, and you'll find that there were very high-level Nazis that were of Jewish origin throughout the experiment. So, and you'll also find that many of the funding mechanisms that were the regime used came from the Jews. Somebody has been arguing with me recently about this, and the fact is that IBM, a wholly owned subsidiary of this Jewish cabal, was up to their eyeballs involved in the Nazi experiment. So one needs wonder how much participation was in the Nazi regime from the Jewish community itself. That still is being sussed out as we speak, but the connections are very clear.
Well, I agree with you, Darrell, and I think it was David Pidcock who mentioned on a previous broadcast, and I got the book as a result. There's a book called Adolf Hitler, Father of Israel.
Well, that's right, and he's the one who signed on to the transfer agreement, and his regime was receiving money to help build political and social change. He was funded by people in Austria to do his dirty deeds in Germany through some rather bizarre means. I mean, his all national socialist doctrine. Now, the book Mein Kampf is said to have been written by a Jew.
Yes, exactly. I believe it was Engels, or I even heard of something recently that it was something put together by Marx or something as a different political paradigm. But you see, in the end, what you would say is it still fits what we're saying with this, because if in the end Adolf Hitler was put there essentially to get Jews to be frightened of living in Europe and therefore go to Israel, well, he's providing a purpose, because what he's actually doing is he's giving the Rothschilds the population they need. You can't have a state without a population. And I think Eustace Mullins has said before, these people didn't want to leave beautiful cities in Europe to go and live in a desert. And so Adolf Hitler provided a purpose, which was to frighten these people into leaving.
Right, and I've pointed out many times that the people who actually ended up in these work camps and these holding facilities built across Germany and Poland actually were the ones who were balking at the idea, or their community was. Their rabbi within their community was saying, "Wait a minute, we don't want to go to a strip of desert in Middle East. We want to stay here." And so political opposition was stamped out against the Zionists. And at the same time, their population that was not fighting back against it and was on board with Zionism was being emigrated. And then they were building themselves a story that would go on to serve them in many different ways in the future, which we're still looking at the results of that today. But I'm not going to get into that analysis too deeply here. Let's go on to 67, because this is when the USS Liberty took place, and this is when the war that they said was started by Arabs was actually started by the Israelis themselves, and it was false flag here and there, and then they said not unlike this, the two soldiers supposedly kidnapped recently in Lebanon, which gave them their reasoning for invading Lebanon and killing tens and tens of thousands of Lebanese civilians, all in the name of stealing water from the Bekaa. And you'll notice that this recent attack over in Syria was all about the same thing. They want the water table sitting under that area of Syria and the northern Bekaa region, because their Israeli experiment cannot continue without a steady supply of water to the valley in Israel. And so they're going to take it by hook or by crook. And to the Israelis, water is every bit as important as any other life-giving to the Zionists life-giving power. Now, without their stealing of water resources and the stealing of the oil transfers out of the Haifa harbor, there probably would not be the level of interest in these countries that are in war right now. Am I right in saying that?
Oh yes, absolutely correct, Al. And I mean, here we mentioned the Liberty attack, and I think that so much good work has been done, and you really need a whole program. You've had Jane Dennis on. I think Mike Delaney from ProThink's done a lot of work on it as well. He had somebody on recently.
Yeah.
So it's probably best for the listener. It's such a serious event in history that I don't think we could do it justice touching on it for a minute or two, but I would suggest to the listeners to look at your Jane Dennis interview to a guy who was actually on the ship and has done a lot of work since then, very bravely, when he was threatened by the military if he ever revealed anything. All sorts of nasty things would happen to him, but he came out and he wrote his book, and he's proved to be right on the money.
Well, you know, the what you write here, which is pretty clear about the Golan Heights being right overlooking the valley, and the valley down below that they took over was their water. One third of the water coming into Israel is coming from that area. But now you look into Sheba Farms region, which they just annexed in southern part of Lebanon, also an aquifer that they wanted. Now that's not enough for their kibbutzes to fill up the oranges that they're selling around the world and the rest of these things. They want now to go right into the central Bakar region, depopulate it so that there's no local demand on water, and take the water rights right out of the Bakar region. And they also want to take the headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates River, which, of course, they won't want it after it goes through the depleted uranium center of Baghdad. Babylon, the dead, and put it through down and by pipeline directly into their fields that they're growing down there in central Israel.
Well, yes, again, you're absolutely correct, and even on the Israeli flag, you've got the blue line at the top and the bottom represent the Nile and the Euphrates River, and of course you've got the Star of David in the middle, which is indicative of they want all the land in between that.
Yep.
And that was why that particular symbol was adopted, the blue line at the top and the bottom, and not just the star.
Well, let's move on here to 1970, where Senator Jackson and Pearl and the rest of them are caught in an intrigue that really never got into the minds of the American public, simply because the reporting agencies that should have been digging through this truth were owned and operated by the same forces doing the crimes. But talk a little bit about that.
Well, of course, we know all about Richard Pearl today, but it's very interesting that he pops up back in 1970, a staffer, I believe, then. And he was working for Senator Henry Jackson, and was actually caught by the FBI giving classified information to Israel. This is another one of our examples of the spying that's been going on. And it's an early example of the power they even had then, because, again, nothing was done as a result of that. And, of course, we've seen how powerful Richard Pearl has become since then. And it's just amazing how people like this are allowed to develop into the powerful people that they are, when it's so obvious from such an early age that they are traitors to America.
Well, and you notice that the puppet prime ministers that have been installed over and over again in Britain, and not unlike our presidents in the United States, are turning over important jobs to these controllers at certain times. And I believe this climate control nonsense that's going on in the world right now is being spearheaded by Rothschild interests, including the heir apparent to the British side of the Rothschild fortune. But you'll notice that certain initiatives and certain important policy shifts that end up giving more power to a world government are being led by these same elements. You can see their hands all over it, and oftentimes see their names on it. And now, Edward Heath, of course, nobody will remember him for any of his achievements, but you certainly can identify his affiliations through his crimes.
Well, yes, and the interesting thing here is we've actually got a Rothschild coming into Edward Heath's government as the head of the policy unit in 1970, and that was Lord Victor Rothschild. And Heath was prime minister until 1974, and he was a pretty disastrous one at that.
Yeah.
And during that time, that is when the UK entered what was then the common market. And the common market was simply a method by where we would have free trade amongst countries. And that, what's important here is that's all it was. It wasn't anything else. It wasn't a European community, and it wasn't then a European Union. And of course, since all that, we've had European courts set up, European central banks set up. But what did the people vote on in the UK? They voted on joining a method of free trade between countries. They didn't vote for European courts. They didn't vote for European banks. They didn't vote for European law, superseding national law. But they've never been given the chance to vote for that. That's just been put through by successive prime ministers. So they will get their foot in the door by something like this. And once the foot's in the door, they will do everything else without a referendum or a vote by the public, because they know the public will vote against it, and they feel that they can just go and make the decisions on their own that affect the essentially the laws and the constitution of the particular states that are being dragged into it.
Well, they're doing it again here in France. France said they didn't want to be a part of the European Constitution, that it did not protect individual liberty and rights, and the public voted against it. So in 2 days from now, the French government, without the approval of its population, is going to sign the European Constitution without asking its public its opinion. And so you're exactly right, and these same methods are being used to take the public out of the equation, and these elite criminals that are running everything are making all of the calls for everybody. But let's go down to 1971 here and talk about Gary Allen and Larry Abram. You know, both Jewish, but you know, oftentimes what we find is that their own community will be the best source for information. You'll notice Nesta Webster, when she wrote her book, went right to the Jewish admissions of guilt to substantiate her claims. She didn't have to go to the opponents of these people to get the conspiracy sussed out. She said, I'll just go and quote what I find in their own literature and their own documentation to prove the things that I'm claiming today. The same thing can be said about Mr. Allen and Mr. Abrams. You want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, I think if I jump forward, because we've talked about socialism and the control there, but this is a very interesting paragraph from their book. They say, one major reason, and this is a quote, for the historical blackout on the role of the international bankers in political history is that the Rothschilds were Jewish. The Jewish members of the conspiracy have used an organisation called the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, as an instrument to try and convince everyone that any mention of the Rothschilds and their allies is an attack on all Jews. Now, we've got two Jewish guys writing this book, so they're making the distinction here.
Yeah.
In this way, they have stifled almost all honest scholarship on international bankers and made the subject taboo within universities. Any individual or book exploring this subject is immediately attacked by hundreds of ADL communities all over the country. The ADL has never let the truth or logic interfere with its highly professional smear jobs. Actually, nobody has a right to be more angry at the Rothschild clique than their fellow Jews. The Rothschild Empire helped finance Adolf Hitler. And
that's
I
right.
Like quotes from books like this because we've got members of the Jewish community that aren't going along with this program. They're seeing what's going on. They're saying, we're Jewish, but that doesn't mean that we're part of this criminal group. And also, we move on to Hank Messick, another Jewish guy, publishing a book, Lansky, this year, which was a biography of Meyer Lansky. And it initially had the following subtitle on the cover, Jews Control Crime in the United States.
Yep.
Now, the ADL get wind of this same year. They contacted the publishers, and as a result of their involvement, the cover was reprinted with the following subtitle, The Mob Runs America, and Lansky Runs the Mob. So it's sort of saying, the Mafia runs America, and Lansky runs the Mafia. Meyer Lansky is Jewish, and he retired to Israel, so he couldn't be extradited. So it's the same thing, but it's just sort of written in a different way, so it's not so blatant.
Who wrote this here? It says, The CIA and the FBI are tinker toys compared to the ADL. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, all this stuff is in Andrew's book, and we don't need to read every paragraph here, because we're already running into almost an hour and a half here. I do want to talk about the WHO and vaccine programs. And you'll notice today, Africa is being depopulated by the use of vaccines, primarily financed by Jewish capitalists or capitalists associated with the Jewish community. One of them is the Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation, who have actually been found to have vaccine programs with sterilization elements within the vaccines that are being given out all over parts of Africa. We also know that AIDS, wherever there has been a smallpox vaccine use in Africa, within a couple of years there is a massive outbreak of AIDS and people dying of AIDS-related diseases. So what's happened is that these criminals have used AIDS-laced vaccines throughout the Third World to depopulate. And now if you take a look at the numbers in Africa, it's in the tens, if not closer to 100 million people dead by direct result of AIDS. But here's the worst thing. The generation of children who were born of these parents who are no longer alive have grown up as orphans or street kids, and they've been easily indoctrinated into child armies and into criminal elements throughout Africa to destabilize the entire continent. So the political ramifications of AIDS are just now being felt in Africa, and they're being exploited by these same criminals.
Well, yes, Darrell, and it's very interesting. There's, as we touched on before, about the moving of the races around the world, and I think they've taken the Africans that they want from Africa, and of course Africa's very mineral rich now, and these people there are just kind of in their way, so they're doing what they can to depopulate that area. And something very interesting I got in my Hotmail account a couple of days ago was a joint email from Microsoft and from Dell, and I don't know if the listeners have received this as well, because I've got a couple of accounts and it arrived in both, and they're launching a new product called Dell Red or something like that, where if you buy a particular product from it, they will donate up to $150 to vaccination programs in Africa. And this was an email that came from Microsoft and Dell literally over the weekend. So it's, you know, very coincidental that we end up touching on this subject today, because we're talking about the vaccination programs and how they've laced the viruses into those programs to depopulate it. And we've got two Jews, Bill Gates and Michael Dell, getting together to try and get us to buy computers that will make a donation per computer, product, software, whatever it was, I'm not sure the full ins and outs, to be donated to help fund these programs.
Well, let's talk about an employee of the Rothschilds-controlled IBM who invents the universal product code. Why don't you talk about Mr. Lohrer? And that'll be our last one for today, Andrew.
Yeah, well, this is George Lohrer. This is when it was this far back in 1973 when the product code, which is the standard barcode that people find on pretty much all the goods that they buy, and it was called the UPC, the Universal Product Code, to be placed, as we see today, on virtually every item we trade. I've even seen it in England lasered onto the skins of bananas. Now, what this barcode has, if people take a barcode and they find an item that's, you've got the numbers below the lines, you need to find an item with a 6 as one of the numbers, and if you look at the lines above that, and then you look at the lines at either end and the lines in the middle that do not have a number under them, because every barcode has a line, or one of these UPC barcodes has a line either end and a line in the middle that has no number under it, but you need to find one with a 6 on so you can see what lines the 6 denotes. Now, when you look at the 6 and you look at the lines above it, it's exactly the same as the lines at either end and in the middle of a barcode, which means every barcode has a hidden 666 on it. Now, I don't go on too much about the religious aspects of this in my book. Other people have written on that subject, but I found it absolutely astonishing that someone can develop something such as this and decide to choose those three numbers to be hidden on it. Why they wouldn't choose 444 or, you know, 999 or something like that. If you were going to look at inventing something like this, why would you choose something that was going to be so frightening to so many people? Why would you choose that? Those numbers.
It's no different than these politicians, Andrew, using this Hookham's horn thing, which is actually a Kabbalistic sign.
Oh, absolutely, and there's so many of them doing it, and they can't all be Texas Longhorn.
There you go. And most of these people have never heard of the Texas Longhorn, so you can't understand it. So, you know, they do have these Kabbalistic connections, and the spiritual arm of this stuff within this criminal group goes back to, according to Muhammad Rafiq, to the Honig family, which is also involved deeply in our Federal Reserve, but they have been one of the families that keeps out of the limelight. Of course, the limelight, when I started doing these broadcasts, Rothschild was never mentioned. Now, we just never talked about him on any broadcast until I brought him up in this alternative movement. You'll find his name everywhere today, but it was on no one's lips when I started. And in fact, you remember my first broadcast when I would bring up the name. I was concerned at the time. But of course, today everybody seems to be claiming information about Mr. Rothschild, and it doesn't matter how the word gets out. I appreciate everybody getting it out there. But take a look at the exponential change we've had in truth here, and how many people have come to understand this conspiracy through looking at how this has all happened here on the French Connection.
Well, absolutely, Darryl. And one thing I'd just like to, very, very quick final quote, because this was written by the most official biographer, if you like, of the Rothschilds, which was Frederick Morton in 1962, because we touched on how they hide their companies. And what he said in his book, The Rothschilds in 1962, was, though they control scores of industrial, commercial, mining and tourist corporations, not one bears the name Rothschild. Being private partnerships, the family houses never need to and never do publish a single public balance sheet or any other report of their financial condition. And I think that can really sum up what we've discussed today.
It can. Well, you've done a heck of a job here. This has been a wonderful broadcast. Very informative, extraordinary, and it'll live on in its importance, because, you know, one of the things about these broadcasts, ladies and gentlemen, is the work that we do here is timeless in its importance to all of you, and if you hear this, you know, 10 weeks or 10 years from now, the significance of it will not be diminished. So please share this information with the people you care about, and those you know can make a difference in your communities. There are opinion shapers in this world who need to be brought up to speed on just how dire our condition is in the state of the world. Start them out, as I have often said, with Mr. Benjamin Friedman, because his sincerity and his work on the early conspiracy makes it clear that we are in a very serious mess. And then lead up with the rest of these important books and documents on the French Connection's website. And of course, one of the major ones, of course, being the research that Andrew Carrington Hitchcock has done here in his Synagogue of Satan. And, you know, Andrew, the work that we do I do get some thanks for it, but I got to tell you, it's not about being thanked for this. It's about self-preservation here for people who care about liberty and freedom. We are on the verge of losing everything that we hold dear to ourselves. Is it not true?
Oh, absolutely. And I'd like to encourage the listeners to please donate to the French Connection to keep this going. Trying to find new books all the time, trying to put more resources up for you so that you can look at these and learn. It's a process, it's a non-for-profit process, and it's a process that we need to keep doing, so you can get on there, you can download these books, so if at some point they decide to pull the internet or whatever they try and do, we've got copies of these, and we can preserve this history and preserve this truth, and we need, Darryl needs your support through the donations to help keep this endeavour running. I do my best to put the excerpts of my book up for free, and I'd prefer you to donate to him than to buy a copy direct from me, because it's so important that this message continues to get out there.
Thank you, Andrew. You know, I don't want to keep you any longer, my friend. You've probably got a dinner to sit down to. And ladies and gentlemen, the work we do here at the French Connection is actually life and death for most of us, because if you're living in the Western world, things around us are bleak, to say the least. And I need each and every one of you to take this seriously and to begin to work feverishly and tirelessly at getting these informations to as many people as you can. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Darrell Bradford Smith telling you to please take care of your families and be well. Bye-bye now.